So the question here, can you talk about easements that are used like leases, so-called leasements, or whether we should just consider using a lease? So you often in these real estate agreements, you have both. So, and it'll be called a solar lease and easement agreement. Leasement is a new one for me. That's a great combination of those two words. And we would recommend that those real estate agreements do include both lease rights and easement rights. They are separate legal rights. So just using a lease that's going to give you again, that right to physically occupy the property. And you can include in that lease what your easement rights would be. But typically, we like to see those broken out as easement rights. So that's a non-possessory right to do something on the land. So the lease and easement really covers both bases. It's helpful to give that name to your agreement in the title. Sometimes you'll see something called solar lease at the top, but truly it's a lease and easement agreement. So again, those two real estate concepts can seemingly overlap, but both are truly important in your real estate agreement. So second question here, can you speak to the benefits and risks of including a broadly defined use provision in a site control document to allow for possible co-location of facilities in the future? Yes, so we are going to get to that actually on the battery side in just a second. So I will address that as we keep going. So turning to developers' rights for storage. So BESS is an abbreviation, battery energy storage systems, that's sometimes used. The battery agreements will specifically, again, provide for that broad statement of use as well as the right to transmit energy to the grid. They're not going to have those appurtenant easement rights to collect natural resources because you're just dealing with a battery project for standalone batteries. But to the participant's question, co-location is very common with battery projects. So you may actually see in your broad statement of purpose an inclusion of the right to do battery projects in addition to your wind or to your solar. So yes, I guess is a short answer is that that's common where you'll broaden your standalone wind or solar agreement to include those additional rights to co-locate batteries on your development property. We mentioned purchase options in the beginning. If you are doing a standalone battery project, typically the acreage is going to be so much smaller than you might expect for utility scale wind or solar that a purchase option might become a financially feasible vehicle to obtain site control. And again, that purchase option is going to be an exchange of compensation to the landowner so that the developer has a period of time, typically a number of years, to assess the land for viability for that battery project. And then the exercise of the option is that real estate transaction where the developer then takes ownership of the property and then owns that property outright. And for completion's sake, here's the time lapse of a battery project being built. I like this project because you can see just how different the impact to land is. Here, the developer starts with a concrete pad. So you're not in the middle of a huge farm field. It's clearly developed. You can see kind of around the edges that there may not be unobstructed access to solar or wind here. There's lots of shadows crossing the property day by day. But this is a specific battery-only site. So it's not needed, and those easement rights likely weren't included here because they weren't necessary. You may have heavier equipment like these cranes that are coming through. But again, with the concrete pad, that's not necessarily an easement right that needed to be considered here. So there's our beautiful California battery project going through. All right, so that's it for the rights being granted to the developer. Moving on to payment structures. So we're now going to get into how wind, solar, and battery projects differ in terms of payment structures between developers and landowners. So in general, payment structures and real estate agreements will be set up to compensate the landowner depending on what kinds of rights are being granted. And as we've discussed, Agreements often combine an option with a lease. So you're going to have an option period in your wind, solar, or battery lease. So it's a combination of the two. And there may also be a construction period in there as well. And payment structures are typically crafted to line up with these different time periods. So that option period is usually compensated at a lower rate than the later periods contemplated by the lease. And this is commensurate with the generally fewer rights that the developer has during that time. The developer might have access to the property. They might have the ability to, or they should have the ability to conduct studies during that time, but there's no heavy equipment or installation facilities. So the payment's going to be lower. In construction, if it is broken out in the lease as a separate construction period, and it isn't always, there's typically, again, a one-time fee to compensate the landowner for the fact that the land's going to be heavily used and largely inaccessible during construction. And then finally, the operating period. This is going to look more like your typical rent structure. So in the lease period, you'll have periodic rents being paid to the landowner. One component to be aware of is that rent is often subject to an escalator, and savvy landowners will know to negotiate that, and somewhere between 1% and 2% annually is common, although escalators are not always included in every agreement.